From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. They say aimlessly, when my mind
is at rest, I'm sure of what makes. Heavy metal music splits the crowd in most places. Metalheads, headbangers, love it, can't get enough. Everybody else, not so sure. Maybe once in a while, maybe never. Dedicated fans will tell you there's a lot going on there. Community and catharsis, freedom and primal emotion, artistry and rough stuff. This hour on Point, heavy metal and what it's always been about. You can join us on air or online. Metalheads, tell us why you love it, what it means to you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A big new book goes through the music, the deep history, the politics of metal. It is Louder Than Hell, the definitive oral history of metal. Just out. Its authors are with us. From New York, John Wiederhorn, senior writer for the rock and metal magazine Revolver. John Wiederhorn, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. And from New York, Catherine Turman, former editor-in-chief of RIP magazine, radio producer with Nights with Alice Cooper. Catherine Turman, thanks for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you. And a little Killswitch Engine with In Due Time behind us right here. Louder Than Hell is the new book. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Hey, John, take us in right here to Killswitch Engine. Who are they? What strand of metal are they? What do you hear?
Well, Killswitch Engage actually is one of the real prime bands from the metalcore movement. It's a genre of metal, or a subgenre of metal, that combines various different strains. So there's some thrash metal going on, some death metal, and then some real melodic, chorus-heavy stuff that kind of stems more from 80s commercial metal. And the appeal there is the real seesaw between the brutal heaviness and the euphoric choruses.
A Killswitch Engage. I think I said Engine. Sorry. I'm not a fan, but I'm trying. I'm listening closely. Catherine Turman, you know, is this the, I don't know, is this where metal is right now, or is this just one of many prongs on the fork?
Well, I think it is definitely one of many prongs. It is, in terms of where metal is, yes, it's new because they've come out more recently than Black Sabbath, say, who, you know, were 40 years ago, yet Black Sabbath has a new record now. So I think that's the thing about metal. You know, the bands from 40 years ago are still going strong, many of them, and have the same fans and new fans, and yet Killswitch Engage and Hatebreed and Lamb of God, there's a lot of newer bands in the last decade who are hopefully going to last another 40 years in their careers.
John, you've got fans who absolutely love this, who will go anywhere for it, and a whole lot of other people who just turn it off and walk away and maybe have never really listened long or closely enough to figure out what's going on there. I mean, for that side of the hall, John, talk about metal and what it is and what draws its really dedicated audience.
Sure. Heavy metal is really a music that's obviously about volume, aggression, catharsis. It generally appeals to a blue-collar audience, but there's also a lot of truly intelligent people that have been attracted to it through the years. And what it has in common is, or what these two groups have in common, is frequently they're outcasts, or they feel like outcasts in one way or another. And the music provides a real sense of empowerment. The lyrics are often empowering, and the music is aggressive. The guitar solos are bombastic, and it really just is a overwhelming assault on the senses that really gives you the feeling of being alive.
Catherine, is this the music of the alienated?
Yes, I think it is. Though I'm a huge fan, and I don't consider myself particularly alienated, but it touches on that side for me as a fan. I think it's definitely a welcoming group. You go to a metal concert, you're the kid who feels alone and weird. You're the strange one in school, you know, sitting in your bedroom. You go to a show, you see your people. It's a sense of belonging. So it brings in the alienated and gives them a place to bond and meet others like them, I feel.
Right. There's a real sense of community that comes out of the music and unites these people. And that's where a lot of them draw strength, I believe.
Let's hear more. This is Honor Never Dies from Hatebreed.
Honor Never Dies from Hatebreed. Okay, we got a lot of rage going on there, very wrathful delivery, and that is very consistent here, John. What's that about? Is this people who have been hurt and they are kicking back? Is it people who see a flawed society and are really angry about it? Is it just primal, period?
A lot of these people have come from traumatic upbringings and risen above. There are an awful lot of heavy metal musicians that have either been through really rough childhoods, dealt with a lot alienation in their lives, and need this music as a source of catharsis and empowerment. But some of them aren't necessarily from broken homes or from abusive homes. Some of them are just kids who grew up feeling out of place, didn't fit in with the jocks, didn't fit in with the popular crowd, and just gravitated towards this and met other people who also like this. And one thing that's important, I think, is unlike many other forms of music, if you like this music when you're a kid, chances are you're going to like it 30 years later.
There's something that lasts right there. Catherine, you and John talked with a lot of heavy metal musicians. I mean, a couple of hundred here for the interviews for this oral history. Give us a little sense of who you talked to for the book, Catherine.
I think it's more of who we didn't talk to.
yes, indeed.
Well, we had, both of us had a bit of archival material since we've been journalists for quite a while, which is nice because we got of course, people who'd passed away, and a lot, unfortunately, about 10 people passed away during the writing of our book, including the great Ronnie James Dio, who's also with Black Sabbath, Pete Steele from the band Typo Negative.
Paul Gray from Slipknot.
I mean, exactly.
Jeff Hanneman with Slayer just this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awful. They had a big
memorial service yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then going way back, Dickie Peterson from Blue Cheer died. I think Catherine did the last interview with him. And he was one of the bands that inspired what became heavy metal. He's sort of what we describe as proto-metal, and Black Sabbath kind of came out of that mold.
Yeah, and we have bands that people might not consider metal, but we felt were important to be included because they influenced many metal bands. For instance, like Van Halen, I wouldn't call them metal, but, you know, huge influence on Anthrax, many other bands. Same thing with Kiss, not necessarily metal, but again, so many, you know, from Pantera to many other bands, they were an influence. So even bands like that are in the book, in addition to the people who are just, you know, hardcore, straight up black metal, death metal. Everyone.
let's get back to some of that 1970. I mean, early on in this sort of ball of wax here, Black Sabbath with Black Sabbath, album of the same name, 1970. Sabbath, 1970, Tony Iommi, Ozzy Osbourne, and all the rest. First song off their first album. John, did they know it was metal? Did they call it metal in those days?
Well, it's funny because the term heavy metal didn't come out until, I believe, 77 or so, 74. It was years later, but we have Tony Iommi talking, no, I'm sorry, Geezer Butler, the bassist of Black Sabbath, told me that when he first heard their music called heavy metal, he was offended. He thought, well, this heavy metal sounds like garbage can lids dropping on the ground and making a horrible clatter. That's not what we're about at all. And Black Sabbath actually started as a progressive blues band before they really founded the template that became heavy metal. And it was with this song.
Yeah, and I would add that definitely when I started, you know, John and I did a lot of interviews separately for the book, some together.
Yeah.
I would definitely ask people, you know, what is heavy metal? And we did a lot of research into the actual term, which goes back to William Burroughs. And then the words heavy metal thunder are mentioned in a song, though it, you know, Born to Be Wild, but that's actually referring to a motorcycle. So the term heavy metal was around, but it didn't apply to music initially.
We've got a lot to look at in this hour. The new book is Louder Than Hell, the definitive oral history of metal. Here's Iron Maiden, 1982, Number of the Beast, a little satanic thread running through here as well. We'll look at that, what that's about. John Wiederman and Catherine Turman are with us, co-authors of the new book, Metalheads. What is at the heart of all this? Is it pain, sorrow, anger, catharsis, rage? What makes a fan of metal, and what does metal give its fans? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Here's Iron Maiden, 1982. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about heavy metal, the music, the culture, the characteristics, the history, the dark side of rock, metal. John Wiederman and Catherine Turman are with us. John is a longtime music journalist, senior editor for the rock and heavy metal magazine Revolver. Catherine was editor-in-chief at RIP, and she's a producer with the Nights with Alice Cooper radio show, syndicated radio show. Big book out, Oral History, the definitive oral history of metal. They join us from New York. We're talking about metal. If you know it well, call in and tell us what draws you. If you don't, we encourage you to stay and give it a shot. There is some edgy content coming up here in lyrics, violence, aggression, so be advised of that. Metalheads, what's at the heart of it? What makes a fan of metal? How do you hear metal? If you're a fan or not, do you run from it? Do you run to it? Is that your iTunes playlist? Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Slipknot, Killswitch, Engage, Cannibal Corpse? If you're not a fan, what do you hear in the music? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Looks like Kill, Motley Crue behind us right here. Catherine, what genre, what phase of metal is that all about?
Well, that's interesting. They are from Los Angeles, and they were kind of the start of what some people call hair metal. You know, that's not it's not the most flattering term, and I hate to use it, but they're part of the L.A. scene that were kind of influenced by glam and punk, and I would say that's obviously brought Guns N' Roses, Rat, Poison. A lot of those bands, yes, they had hits with their ballads, which is kind of a hair band trademark, but they all started out and all have their really hard side, like you're hearing now in Motley Crue and Looks the Kill. And the Motley Crue look of makeup was definitely a harder edge, even like the under eye kind of, you know, sports slashes rather than just mascara and girly makeup. And it was a leather and, you know, kind of wristband glove aggro look.
We've got Sri Devta writing in here. Says, growing up in L.A., I spent a fair amount of time on the Strip. Whiskey, a Go-Go, the Roxy, down the road, the Troubadour. Says, I loved the freedom of the music. The angst I was feeling was articulated in the music. But writes, as I matured, the sexism got too big to ignore. What about that, Catherine? You're a fan.
I am a fan, and I'm a female fan, definitely. Sexism, yes. I could do a Spinal Tap quote here, but I won't. But I think most of it, I will say, is in good fun And I think escapism is sort of the main thing. I've interviewed, of course, hundreds of bands, including, for instance, Ice-T, who had a metal band called Body Count. Mm. And, you know, there definitely was some misogyny, it's not anti-woman. It's more celebrate women for their physical attributes rather than their mental.
You're
a very generous woman there. John Wiederhorn, what do you say?
No, I was just saying there was a lot of objectification going on, and I don't think that's exclusive to metal. I think, you know, men in general tend to see beautiful women and objectify them, and if they're put in a position where they're on stage and there are all these gorgeous girls in the audience and they have the opportunity to hook up with one or two or three.
A dozen.
You know,
there's
a day.
Plenty of that in your oral history. We hear a lot about that.
Well, you know, there's a term sex, drugs, and rock and roll for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not all about that. These guys are serious musicians. But some of these people were very young. They weren't married. They weren't tied down. And they were like kids in a candy store.
Yeah, and I would say, obviously, rap is a little more hateful and negative towards women, where metal is a little more celebratory and, party animal-esque, if that is a new term I've coined.
We had some big hair metal there from Motley Crue. By the time Metallica comes along, we're talking thrash. What's thrash?
Well, what's interesting is there's a big divide between thrash and hair metal. They were happening around the same time.
Early 80s.
But thrash was a reaction against the perceived softness, not heaviness, of commercial metal, of hair metal. So these bands came out and said, this sounds like pop music. This isn't heavy. So you had Metallica, who were influenced by a whole nother subgenre called the new wave of British heavy metal, which brought on bands like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. We heard Iron Maiden a little earlier, and they were essential in that scene. But these guys were heavier. Their lyrical content was darker. And the thrash band said, well, let's take that, combine it with punk rock, ramp it up, and put in some really violent lyrics or aggressive lyrics or sometimes really confessional but brutally so lyrics.
We're going to blow this place away with the lyrics in Metallica. This is 1983. Hit the Lights was the album. Kill 'Em All, the Metallica song. Hit the Lights from the 1983 Metallica album, Kill 'Em All. Let's bring our listeners in. Jess in Nashville is calling. Hi, Jess. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Pretty well. What do you hear? What do you love, Jess?
Well, man, I've been listening to metal since 92, and aside from, a lot of angst and anger, the point of it all is that our surroundings aren't good enough. And it has a lot to do with all of the things that you talk about on a daily basis as far as political things and human rights and all that kind of stuff. It's not just throwing a fit to throw a fit, but it's also a way to transcend what we're in right now.
So you're saying, in a way, it's a kind of protest music. The world isn't good enough the way it's put together.
That's right. It's all greed and money, man.
Jess, we got it. Thanks for calling in from Nashville. I mean, John, there's the case that, people listen and say, oh, that's dark, that's evil. But Jess makes the case, it's a kind of a cry for something better, please.
Well, I think you can take that all the way back to the early days of Black Sabbath. They were playing in an era of the Vietnam War. They were writing songs like War Pigs. They weren't all about occultism and darkness. There was a touch of politics in there. And these guys grew up in war-torn Birmingham, which had been, you know, bombed terribly during World War II, and you know, their environments were horrible. They had impoverished upbringings. They wanted something more, and I think that it very much is protest music in that sense. Then, across the span of the genre, there have been some very specifically political bands, like Rage Against the Machine, who were one of the first important rap metal bands, and their lyrics are very, very blatantly political, and their members have been very active in various you know, political organizations and movements.
Yeah, and in fact, even Judas Priest, you know, with Breaking the Law, you know, that their lyrics are, as British citizens, at least back in the day, about Margaret Thatcher, about what they saw growing up. And, you know, of course, a lot of their songs are about bikes and other things, but definitely, even in the early days of metal, a lot of political unrest and personal and political angst. Yep.
But it comes down to anger, I think. A lot of metal is about anger, whether it's anger with your circumstances on a social, economic level, whether it's anger with politics, or just blind rage that maybe brought on some of the more hateful and graphic lyrics that some bands, you know, through the history of metal have presented to the public.
Spewed forth.
You can interpret that anger in a lot of ways. We talked with Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine right here last year, and he talked about the political impact of music, his music included.
You know, it's my belief that every successful progressive struggle has had a great soundtrack. You know, whether it was whether it's union movements or the civil rights movement or the peace movement during the Vietnam War era, that songs kind of emerge from the people that speak to the time.
Tom Morello, Rage Against the Machine, with us here on Point just last year. Jason in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jason, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a musician, so I'm going to talk about the music from that angle.
Yeah.
And I have three things to say, which I will keep very brief. The unbelievable skill of musicianship and the precision of how the pieces are composed and put together is something that drew me especially to Slayer.
Yeah.
As a player, it's also cathartic, not just listening. I'm a drummer mainly, and to just be able to play that hard and that loud and that with that kind of physical intensity itself is really cathartic. And the music that I've gotten to love is at times stuff that I hear completely unexpectedly on the radio or in a record store, and I have to stop everything that I'm doing and listen to it. And that happened to me with Slayer and with Slipknot.
Yeah.
So hats off to anybody who can just like totally grab my entire attention and get into what they're doing.
No kidding. That musicianship, the unbelievable skill there, and the intensity of it. We've got people, Jason, thanks for your call. John, Catherine, lots of people writing in here. I mean, Mike writes, he says, the syncopated drums and guitar evoke a tribal emotion other genres cannot produce. Interesting also, he says, the metal community consists of some of the nicest people I've met. Never mind the costumes, they can look fierce. Daphne, speaking on the that side of the gender line, she says, it awakens the primal feelings in me. And Catherine says, this kind of to part of Jason's point, Catherine, here's Catherine Buonacore writes to us, the live shows are what draw her to heavy metal. The energy and density of the music, the variety. Death metal is not thrash metal, is not power metal. They can overlap, but all of that energy and density. And as our caller says, Catherine, musicianship, pulling people in.
Yes, agreed completely. I mean, I'm glad you're having some women write in there. Of course, you know, virtuosity is across all forms of music. But I think in metal, obviously, you're playing a lot faster. Oftentimes, the musicians themselves are banging their heads. For instance, I believe Tom Araya from Slayer actually injured his neck from many years of headbanging. So there's a...
and Dave Mustaine.
Yes. So as for me, I agree. It touches something primal in me. Maybe, you know, women, at least in the past, were brought up to be, you know, nice, quiet, polite. But obviously, a lot of women don't feel that way. And you know, I didn't grow up with older brothers or anything. I'm not quite sure how I found my way to this, but I think there was something in me that attracted me to metal and heavy music at a young age. And I think if you have that feeling inside, you're going to find it, male or female. And I think women need to understand it's totally acceptable to be in the mosh pit and to wear a band t-shirt that no one can read. It's and I think there's, and perhaps later we'll talk about mosh pits and things like that. I stay out of those just because I like my teeth, but I sometimes wish I could just jump headfirst and bounce up against everyone else and feel the same thing together. I just am too old and too scared, but a lot of my female rock friends do.
Let's talk about politics before we get to mosh pits, because our caller Jason mentioned Slayer, and of course it's got a lot of fans, big metal band, but also controversy here, and people wonder about metal sometimes. You know, what about the politics? Maybe they're progressive, maybe they're the opposite of that. Slayer ran into trouble back in the day on its soundtrack to the Apocalypse album with its track Angel of Death, where they were talking about Mengele, the sort of the Nazi death camp, Dr. Joseph Mengele, and people wondered, well, where are their sympathies here? This is rough stuff, but let's listen. This is a Slayer describing what was going on in the death camps in World War II. Slayer with Angel of Death. They got a lot of heat for that, John Wiederhorn. People scratching their heads and saying, are they celebrating this? Are they describing it? Are they condemning it? How do you hear what went on in that song, Angel of Death?
Well, it was a very controversial song, no question. The song very vividly accounts the war atrocities that Joseph Mengele, enacted on innocent and helpless people in concentration camps. And there has been accusations that Slayer have been neo-Nazis. There have been accusations that the band was celebrating these atrocities. But
what's the
really
band
what
say?
It comes down to, well, what the band says and what the reality is, I think, is that heavy metal is about extremism. It's about singing about horrific things. And, this is not a song that glorifies the Holocaust. This is a song that describes the Holocaust. And Slayer described all kinds of atrocities. I had an interview with Jeff Hanneman.
Who wrote the lyrics to Angel of Death.
Yes, and he's the one who sadly passed away very recently. He wrote the song, he wrote the lyrics, and he said that it was written as an account. He's fascinated. He was fascinated by World War II. His dad was in the war, and another thing to add to the controversy was he collected World War II memorabilia, as do some other people fascinated with the evil parts of history.
As do many doctors and dentists
absolutely.
Whoever.
But he told me in this interview that, people have come up to him across the span of time and said, hey, we're doing a white power rally and we'd like you to be our keynote speaker. And he said he'd look at them like, what? And they'd say, well, aren't you? He'd say, no. And he said, but you did. And he'd say, no, you don't get me at all. And he'd walk away. Slayer's bassist is Chilean. And, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the lyrics in a lot of heavy metal songs. Yes, it can be a glorification or at least an illustration of violence and decay. And that's part of what makes it so extreme. The music is about going from one extreme to the next, and as you get from thrash metal to death metal to black metal, everybody is taking on more and more vivid subject matter.
John, stand by right there if you'd be good enough. We've got a break coming up here. John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman. The new book is Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal, Pantera with Cowboys from Hell behind us. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Yeah. with herself. She likes the dark. And on her milk-white neck, the devil's mark.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about heavy metal, the music, the culture, the history, with John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman. They've put together a big book, Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal, talking with a lot of metal performers from really era after era of metal. Behind us right here, Typo Negative, 1993, Bloody Kiss is their song Black, number one, Little Miss Scare All. I misidentified what we went out of the last segment on, of course, and I'm sorry about that. But that was, we went out with I Am the Black Wizards by Emperor, some black metal out of Norway, controversial in itself. You can join us at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. John, help me out here. That was black metal, and I blew right by it with the wrong ID. Talk about controversy. Right. Plenty of controversy around this sort of black neck of the woods and the Norwegians. Give us a sense of that, John.
Well, in Norway, after the death metal scene had really taken its music to its utmost extreme and perfected the sound to the point where you had everything so synchronized that you could separate one instrument from another with ease. A lot of these musicians in Norway said, well, this sounds too good. We must make music that sounds even more extreme and is darker, and all these bands sing about evil, but they are not really evil. So some very important bands in Bergen and Oslo, amongst them Mayhem and Dark Throne, came up with this style of music that was recorded so that it sounded like you were using a portable tape recorder that was placed in the next room, and that there was no mixing board. I mean, that's not the case, but they wanted it to sound as raw and as brutal as possible and play as fast as possible. And then also, they said, well, these other people sing about violence. We will be violent. And that's where a lot of the controversy erupts and a lot of the ugliness.
I mean, they were aggressively pagan up to and including, I think, burning down churches.
Yeah, these guys were very young, and in their minds, the Christian faith had really compromised the roots of the Viking religion and
building churches on their sacred burial grounds,
their holy grounds.
Exactly,
right.
That was their justification for the burning.
That was early '90s. Where is that now? That movement, black metal.
Well, that's funny because it's most celebrated or it's most known, it's most notorious still for the church burnings and the murders that happened within the scene, and yet the movement has survived, and there are some very, very talented black metal bands, both out of Europe and America, who have no criminal records whatsoever. Noctemystium, for instance, are a U.S. band composed of very, very gifted musicians. Satyricon are a band out of Norway, and some of the old Norwegian bands who did horrible illegal things, are now they've served their time. They're out of jail and they're making great music. Mayhem are still around after having endured the suicide of a lead singer and all of the grueling stories that went along with that, and then the subsequent murder of the band's lead guitarist from a rival band member in a different band. So
I want to ask what metal musicians, metal heads for that matter, do with sort of mainstream perception that can tie this into other kinds of violence. I mean, Jared Loughner, those Tucson killings, and you read metal fan. The Columbine killers, you read metal fans. How does that get processed in the musical community?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it has a long history. I mean, one of the first lawsuits, I believe, was Judas Priest. There were two kids who were fans of the band, attempted kind of a suicide pact. One succeeded, the other didn't, but died later. So I think the public perception is, oh, you know, every dark kid who hurts himself or wants to hurt someone else listens to metal. But
let's blame it on the music.
Yeah, but I think in historically, that's really, there's no way, you know, it's the same thing with video games, basically. You know, I think you have to be, have a lot of issues to do something like that, to take your own life or someone else's. And, you know,
it could have been triggered by anything. I mean, it's not the music that causes these aberrant people to engage in horrific acts, and the music has been victimized. Mm-hmm. I would argue that there are probably more people doing time in jail who are country fans than who have ever been metal fans or been in metal bands.
And yet, there's a community feeling here. It can feel sometimes like a wounded community. There's definitely the readiness to express rage. I suppose you could say, well, does that make you responsible when violence happens? Or is this just a fact that this rage, anger, disillusionment, alienation is out there, and here's some pocket where people can find fellow feeling?
Yeah, I think, I mean, previously we did discuss alienation, mm-hmm. and how it is a music that draws that sort of kid into it. So, yes, I can see how people think it's part and parcel. But again, it's the kids are searching for... you know, some kind of meaning, and some of them do find it in metal. But again,
and some of them find it in Stephen King novels.
Yes, and some of them find it in rap, and some of them
in horror movies. I mean, I think mm-hmm. fictitious violence is healthy. It's therapeutic. It can help you get through the anger and frustration that you deal with on a daily level, and then move on and go back to your 9-to-5 job or you know, whatever you end up doing. I mean, what I found working on this book was that some of the nicest guys, some of the most sensitive guys, some of the most soft-spoken guys are in some of the most aggressive bands with the most horrific, graphically violent lyrics. Some of them are vegan. Some of them are animal rights activists. And even the guys in Slayer, soft-spoken, very nice. You know, you wouldn't anticipate this kind of murderous side of them from who they are and what their personalities are. It's
Catherine and John, if we could, let's go right there. Thanks to your intercession, we have Rob Flynn with us right now. He's lead vocalist and guitarist for the heavy metal band Machine Head, which he helped form, and the original, only original member still in the band, founded back in 91. They'll be on this summer's Rockstar Energy Drink Mayhem Festival all over the U.S. San Bernardino and Boise and Phoenix, Dallas, Tampa, Atlanta, more. Rob Flynn of Machine Head joins us right now from Oakland, California. Rob Flynn, thank you very much for being here.
Hey, John, how's it going, man?
It's going very well. John and Catherine, say hi to Rob.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, so, yeah,
thanks for waking up.
Thanks for being there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Rob, who comes out for your concerts? How would you describe the audience?
The audience? Yeah, I was listening to kind of what you guys were talking about. I mean, you know, we get all walks of life, but I would definitely say that they're, you know, we definitely kind of attract the rejects and the people who didn't really fit in. And, you know, some of them got problems. I mean, especially early on, we used to get a lot of people from prison. You know, we used to get a lot of, you know, kind of ex-gangbangers or stuff like that. And, you know, they're just there to vent their anger in a healthy way. And we were there to give them a soundtrack to do it.
Do you embrace that when you're writing, when you're performing? Do you think, that's my people, that's who I'm writing, performing for?
I mean, I don't really think about it when I'm writing, but, you know, I mean, if they would start fighting, which oftentimes when we started our first, you know, the first 2 or 3 years that we played toured as a band, I mean, there was so many fights all the time. Our show, you know, we got banned from clubs all over. We were banned from 3 clubs in the Bay Area for us fighting and for our fans fighting at our shows. And, you know, oftentimes we would stop it, man. I mean, we had to stop. We'd stop playing a song and be like, hey, guys, bring it down. Our drummer at the time one time came up and said, you mofos need to get in touch with your feminine side. Like, you know, just trying to get dudes to chill out and vent it in a positive way. But yeah, I mean, there definitely is that anger that comes out. And, you know, sometimes it spills over and sometimes it doesn't. But
Let's hear a little bit of that, if we may, Rob. Hear off your 2007 album, The Blackening, Machine Head, Rob Flynn's group, with Aesthetics of Hate.
It's like a spin in the eye of a dead man's face. Take the wings of a man not yet in his grave. We take what's over all too soon. Because nothing is over, nothing's wrong. So we marry you.
Machine Head with Aesthetics of Hate. Rob Flynn, founder of the group, lead vocalist, guitarist, is with us. So, Rob, what are you doing right there? Is that celebration? Is it description? Is it just a snapshot of a part of human life? Aesthetics of Hate.
That song?
Yeah.
That song was, we had toured with a band called Pantera, a very famous heavy metal band, and their guitarist was tragically murdered on stage. And, you know, we were friends with those guys. I mean, we did, you know, probably 4 months worth of touring with them. And we were pretty sad when it all went down, as was the entire metal community. And about 6 days after he was murdered, an article came out on a very conservative website called The Iconoclast. And the article was called, Aesthetics of Hate, Rest in Peace, Dimebag Darrell, and Good Riddance. And basically it was a long essay about how basically Dimebag got what he deserved for playing heavy metal, and that he reaped what he sowed by singing about the things that he sang or writing the type of music that he played. And, you know, this article ended up getting picked up by CNN and Fox, and it got a lot of massive coverage. And I read it and I was furious. I mean, it was disgusting to read this kind of stuff about, you know, someone who was a friend of ours and someone who was not at all anything like this person was trying to paint him as.
So what is it, Rob?
That song was a direct response, just a pretty much a Neanderthal burst of anger directed about that person who wrote it and at that website, and for anybody who felt like attacking it.
What is it that the author of that essay, Aesthetics of Hate, not your song, but the essay that provoked it, what is it that they, I guess in your view, completely missed about metal and this musician?
I mean, this dude was one of the most talented musicians that's ever walked the face of the earth. I mean, this guy was incredible, incredible guitar player. He was one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. Always, always down to make you laugh, always down for a party, and very welcoming, and made you feel very welcome. And, you know, to sit there and hear these horrible things said about him and just about the metal community as a whole, it was a giant F you to people who think like that. And that's what that entire song is about.
Rob Flynn with Machine Head. Look for them this summer on the Drink Mayhem Festival tour. Rob, thank you very much for joining us for a few minutes here. Wonderful to have you. Thank you.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me. And have a good one, John and Catherine.
Thank you.
Good one to all. A little bit more of Killswitch Engage right here from In Due Time is the song from Single. Killswitch Engage. Michael's calling from Newport, Rhode Island. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Honored to be part of the forum, in particular there with Rob Flynn calling in. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know, I travel a lot for my job. Every couple of years, I'm always in a new location. And everywhere I go, I'm always meeting friends through metal, going through, friends of a friend's barbecue, chatting with somebody, and all of a sudden, hey, we have similar interests, we're like the same bands, and lo and behold, you know, we're going to shows together, we're having fun, and we're hanging out. So.
And what's it say to you, Michael, when you meet somebody who's into metal, and you are too, what does it say to you about what kind of person this might be?
Honestly, I think that they're wholesome, down-to-earth, and I honestly build this instant trust with them, that it's almost this bond that you can almost inherently trust them right off the bat, and that's, it's personal feeling, of course, but that's kind of what I get out of this, this kinship. and still friends today with a lot of my friends. You know, after moving so many times,
yeah,
the friends that I still have are, you know, based in that metal community, and we're still in touch. And people fly out, I fly out to see them, and it's a good time.
It's a bond, Michael. Thanks for your call, John. What is that bond, that kinship in the metal world?
Well, that kinship is essential, really. It's people saying, you know, we don't fit in general society, but we, within our own metal community, can bond, can relate, can talk about things outside of the mainstream. You know, we don't necessarily have to share political views, but we love the same music. And it's an important unifying factor that I think keeps people loving this music for years and years and years. And beyond that, it's a wide, wide range of people who love it. You know, you do have your people who are struggling and blue-collar folk, but there's an awful lot of people from the, academic and intelligentsia who develop a bond with metal maybe in high school when they couldn't get a girlfriend, or maybe, you know, at some point where they just felt empowered by the strength and the energy of it. And these people end up working for magazines. They end up working as producers for radio stations. They end up writing books. They end up putting placement ads of metal music inside big television commercials.
They work for Morgan Stanley. They head corporations. The fun part is discovering you're at a nice dinner, a suit and tie, conservative sort of thing, and discovering how much the guy next to you likes Pantera, even though he's a 45-year-old CEO.
The energy of it, is undeniable. The clock is also undeniable right here. We are up against it. I want to thank the two of you, John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman. The big new book is Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. John, Catherine, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thanks. This was great. Appreciate it.
I hate to end it, but we've got to right there. We'll go out with a little more Black Sabbath. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.